Hey, good evening, everybody. My name is Joanne. I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me back in the back? I worried about that the whole day. Let me begin by telling you that I work at Sam's as a demo person, and today I was demoing salmon and some other dish. So if I smell like fish, that's why. I was, you know, and if there are a bunch of cats out there on the fence tonight, that's why. Okay. Lay down. I've always believed that when I say I'm an alcoholic, that says a lot right there. If anyone had told me 42 plus years ago that I'd be standing in front of a group of people, in a group of alcoholics, in, I guess it's Apworth here, but Woodstock, Georgia, I would have said, no way, I'm not an alcoholic. I had all of this kind of planned, which is never a good idea for me. I was going to bring my little day at a time book, and there was a reading in there, and it said, we alcoholics, when we come in, this is my paraphrasing, when we come into the program, we are narcissistic, egocentric, self-centered to the extreme, and trust me, that's where I was. I started drinking socially when I was in college. And I'm not one of these people that has a long drinking history because I went from 0 to 100 in just a few years. When I came into the program, I answered 18 of the 20 John Hopkins questions. Yes. For those who aren't familiar with those will ask you about blackouts. Have you done this? Have you done that? Yes, yes, to all of them. I didn't know that. I didn't want to know that. What I believe that if you have my husband, you drink too. And you take tranquilizers because he was impossible to live with, which I'm sure partly is true, but mostly I was difficult to live with. And we had two little girls, I think, they were 3 and 8 when I came into AA. That's a good thing and a bad thing because they both have memories of things that I wish they hadn't. And therein lies the shame of my recovery. Because when I came into AA, I had had so many blackouts, not remembering whether I put them to bed at night, or if the little one was in diapers, I didn't remember that. I would pass out, and the little girl would wake up and draw on the wall. Thank God she never got into any cleaners or disinfectants. But my drinking, for the most part, was several years of just pure, unadulterated, easy for you to say, shame. The hand that rocks the cradle should never drink alcohol, at least not like I drank. It was very early on when I started having blackouts. I think within the first 5 years of my drinking, I had blackouts and was reassured by one of my ex-husband's friends that that was normal. So I thought, well, I'm not going to worry about that, you know. Not remembering what I did the night before, making an ass out of myself at a party. There was a time when I thought I should quit smoking. So I decided that instead of smoking, I would drink. And I can assure you that that was a fun night that I still don't remember and never will. Eventually, my drinking progressed with the addition of the pills because I thought the pills would keep me from feeling hungover the next day. And for a while that worked. I mean, it made sense to me, and I'm sure it's made sense to some of you all. I didn't smoke dope or do hard drugs, quote unquote, because I was an upstanding citizen of my town. Now, this upstanding citizen, we were living in St. Louis then, would fall up the steps or down the sidewalk. You know, I really, despite all appearances to the contrary, I have much fewer bruises today than I did then. I also had, I don't know if anybody ever had this happen, but I had these olfactory hallucinations. I would think I was smelling something, or I would be talking about things and not making any sense at all. So I don't know if you guys have ever experienced that, but if you have, you're probably an alcoholic. anyhow, the last drink I had was November 13th, 1974, and that was when I had tried to kill myself for the third time. I loved those pills. My mom died that year, and I had gotten some extras from the doctor up there. So I had both my doctor up in Ohio and my doctor in St. Louis giving me pills during that period of time. I was also taking, I can't remember the name of it, some little red pill that would help me sleep. So I took the tranquilizers as prescribed 4 times a day. And then I took the little red pill at night, no matter how much I had to drink that day. And this final time, I found all the pills, took them, drank a fifth of vodka, because vodka doesn't smell, and woke up kicking an ER nurse. My ex-husband called my family and said, "See, I told you, she's an alcoholic, she's going to die, you better get down here right away." And any other human besides us would have died. But, you know, I had a tolerance that wouldn't quit when it came to alcohol and pills. I was very tiny then and could outdrink any man. I remember we were at a convention, and one of the wives, my husband was a group insurance salesman at that time, one of the wives said, "Boy, I wish I could drink like you." I thought it was a compliment. I was very proud of that. I could drink more than anybody else, drive everybody home, and then I would wake up the next morning and drink some water, and I'd be sicker than a dog. But and the hangovers just kept getting worse and worse. The blackouts kept getting worse and worse. So this last time, I tried to kill myself and woke up, and I thought, well, damn, I can't do this even. I can't do anything right. I can't even kill myself. A psychiatrist there at the hospital in St. Louis said, "You know, I think you're an episodic alcoholic." Well, I like that because, that didn't mean I was so bad. What I realized later was I periodically tried to control it. So I, you know, drink for a while and go on the wagon, sit in my kitchen, sure that this time I was going to have DTs, and I didn't, darn it. But anyway, I say that lightly because I know they're nothing to want to have. Anyhow, so I'm in there. He says, "There's a doctor here in town that has had some luck with people like you." And I thought, people like me? What are you talking about? I'm married, I have a job, I have little kids, I'm this fine, upstanding citizen. So I went, finally, to this doctor after 3 weeks of shaking. I don't know if you've ever withdrawn from tranquilizers and alcohol at the same time, but I can tell you it is not a fun proposition. And then when I got sober, they didn't have a lot of things that they have now. So you just had to go through it. I was standing in front of, I was teaching in a business school, and I stood at the blackboard. The sweat was running down my armpits and shaking like a leaf. And I thought, I don't know how I'm going to do this. Trust me, if anybody says alcoholics don't have willpower, they're wrong. We do. I was going to do it, and I was going to get through it. I went to the library and read all kinds of books, looked in the mirror, oh, is my skin like this? Oh, is my... No, I said, well, I'm probably not really that bad. You know, I was in such denial. So I went to this doctor and told him my plan was to just quit. He suggested I might go to AA, and I said, I don't need to go to AA. Those are people that wear raincoats and live under the bridge. You know, they look like Danny. Sorry, sweetie, I love you. But anyway, that's what I thought. I thought people here were just, yep. I didn't want, and my dad was alcoholic, had never gone to AA. My ex-husband's dad was alcoholic. He went to AA for a year, but he had gone back to drinking. So I didn't know what you guys had for me. Not at all. Finally, this doctor manipulated me into going to AA because he said, there's a group out here in Ellisville, which was a little, whatever, down the road from where I live. He said, they have a lot of people just like you. And that was the hook. That was the, oh, well, I thought if they're just like me, they're probably not that bad. I'm going to go there. And I, that was in the days of long hair and green eyeshadow. And so I went in there knowing that people would not think I was an alcoholic. And one woman reached out to me. She said, here, come and sit by me. So, because I was kind of sliding in. I didn't want anybody to see me. So I sat by her. Her name was Alberta, and I'll never forget her. She told me a little bit about what to expect, but not a lot. And then the basket came around. In St. Louis, they passed it first. And I knew, okay, this is it. All they want is your money. And I started digging for some money. And she said, no, no, no. This is your first meeting. You don't put anything in. So that intrigued me as well. I thought, oh, well, they don't want my money. They must want me. I mean, talk about egocentric. Oh, self-centric. It was always all about me. She suggested that maybe I would like to come back. And they gave me this little white card for the first... No, they didn't. Not in St. Louis. They only gave you a white card after 30 days. So anyway, I thought I'd probably come back for at least that white card. And I started coming every Thursday night. People would say, well, get a sponsor, read the big book, go to meetings as often as you needed to. Well, I wasn't really that bad, so I didn't need to come more than once a week. And I certainly did not need a sponsor because I already knew that, you know, I wasn't as bad as they were. I got the big book, and it was just a bunch of old guys talking, you know, and this is inching toward the 70s, or was in the 70s with women's liberation, so a bunch of old guys really had nothing to say to me, the liberated woman. Today, I can tell you these old guys knew what they were talking about. So if anybody sits down and reads it and think you can't relate, trust me, you can. It just takes a little time. I finally got a sponsor and started going to more meetings than my home group after I almost relapsed. And that was 6 months into the program when we went to visit some friends up in Iowa, and down in Iowa, I guess it was, and I knew they took pills. So I thought, oh, I'll go find one and take it. And I did. And my home group assured me that wasn't a relapse, but in retrospect, it probably was. Because I went home, waited till I was all alone, and took that pill. And sat down and read chapter 3 in the big book. I said, wow, maybe I really am an alcoholic. So long story short, that's when I got serious about the program. And that's when I began to realize that if I worked the program, it might work for me. I got a sponsor. I started going to more meetings. I met a lot of people that I dearly loved, would love to know how they are today. And got my 30-day card and my gold stars. They did all stars then. And hung in there that first year. Now, did things get better for me? Absolutely not, because it was still all about me. And I wasn't really listening about helping others, praying, learning about the spirituality of the program. I finally began to get a little more serious about that in the third or fourth year. I was told when I came into AA, it takes a year to dry out and 3 to 5 years to re-socialize. I'm here to tell you it took me a little longer than that, but I understand today what they meant. Because that first year, first 3 or 4 years, continued my belief that everything was about me. If I walked into a meeting and you looked at me funny, you were talking about me. You didn't like me. I thought if I only had this or that, people would like me. It never occurred to me that people might like me if I liked myself. Hey, Vito, can you hand me the water. Excuse me, guys. My allergies are catching up with me. Anyhow, you know, I could go on and on. I can talk for hours because I've lived so long. But I certainly subscribe to what Charlie B says, you know. If you don't drink and you don't die, you get to stay sober. And that's been my story. I've encountered many obstacles in my recovery. When I was 12, let's see, no, I was only a couple of years sober when my ex-husband and I finally got divorced. He, you know, used to toss me around a little bit, and when I was drinking, I thought I deserved it. But fortunately, when I stopped, I began to realize I did not deserve that. So the girls and I left. We got an apartment. Now you're looking at somebody who had never even written a check on her own. So it was like the first thing I thought was, "Oh my God, how am I going to know how I look?" Because you know there was not going to be anybody to tell me how I looked. Isn't that pathetic when you think about it? And I know you guys don't understand this, but I think the women can relate to that. Anyway, I managed. I went to work. I managed. And then I got fired. My God, what a blow to my ego. I had, there were three of us who got fired in one day because we said bad things about the school. And so we were told we were not needed any longer. And I just couldn't understand how they could let go of such an outstanding teacher. But they did. So I embarked on a period of time where I went to a lot of AA meetings, even during the day, which was nice. They have great meetings during the day. And that helped me a lot. I finally got another job, then I got another job, and then I got a job at a transportation company for a year. And then I landed in the field that I've worked in ever since, and that was employee assistance programming. Worked for the big brewery up in St. Louis. My neighbors love me. I got free beer, so I just passed it out to the neighbors. And you know, all through this, I was never ever tempted to take a drink. It's interesting because as you go along in the program, work the steps, work with the sponsor, do what people suggest you do, the idea of drinking just kind of isn't there anymore, at least it wasn't for me, because that's not who I was anymore. I didn't drink anymore. Still smoked, like a chimney, but I didn't drink. So I met another guy on the AA campus. Guys, I was addicted to men. That's all there is to it. So if you're addicted to women, guys, or men, girls, forget it. The problem is here or here, you know? I know, Danny, I'm sorry. So in any event, I had to try it one last time, and we ended up in Michigan where they did not do AA right. You know, they just did not. If anyone in here has ever moved, you'll know what I'm talking about. Because there's no place like your home group where you first get sober and then you go someplace else. They just don't do it the same way. But what I learned is the people are the same and the program is the same. People in other areas approach it a little bit differently, but it's still AA after all. So I continue going, and about my ninth year, I think, I had a lump in my breast, and I didn't think it was anything serious and put off going to the doctor for a good year, at least. Until I was informed that I probably wasn't going to make it, but we better have surgery and do a biopsy just in case. Well, if the worst case scenario was it. So it wasn't stage 4, though, and I didn't know much about cancer then. So, but I knew stage 4 was kind of bad. It was stage 3. And that's why you see me so nicely flat-chested, you know. When I moved to Minnesota, the doctors there did it prophylactically. If you'd had one here, you got one here, and that was fine by me because I hated those boobs. They looked fine, but they were hot. Anyway, too much information, I know. I survived that. You know, it's hard to kill a drunk. It really is. I survived 3 suicide attempts. I had a bad infection after an appendectomy. Lots of things have happened to me physically. But I believe it's hard to kill us. Our bodies, you know, I went through chemotherapy for a year and prayed that my blood count, my white count would be too low. It never was too low. I said, that's because my body loves drugs. It doesn't care what kind of drugs. It just loves drugs. So as I stand here before you, I have not had a recurrence. Thank God. So that happened. I quit smoking. You know, I started to get this little glimmer about being selfish and self-centered. That really was my absolute introduction to spirituality. Not that I didn't feel that I was in touch with a higher power before that, But by the time that experience was over, I was okay with the outcome, whatever it was. I really was okay with it. And I really had a wonderfully close relationship with my higher power since then. However, the self-centeredness hung around, and the behaviors hung around. I believe that we learn these behaviors so we can get drunk. You know, I would pick a fight with my ex-husband and get drunk. I would get all upset about something. And I found myself being that way in sobriety, in recovery. I found that I would get all agitated over really nothing at all. And in the past, I would have had a drink over it. The last time I behaved like that, except for Comcast, guys, Comcast doesn't count. Because if I have to deal with them, I lose it. But besides Comcast, the last time I lost it was when I was 15 years sober. And I'm not proud of that. I'm just sharing how I came to understand what this program really works or means to me. And what it meant to me is what a lot of us say a lot of times. We may be the only example of a big book anyone ever sees. And I certainly was not an example of a big book that day. I lost it over at the Toyota dealership when I accused them of screwing up a tape that was in my tape deck. I mean, I might as well have just laid down on the pavement and kicked my heels and banged my head. That's how bad it was. But I thought about it later, and I thought, my God, Joanne, this is terrible that you behaved that way. So that was an eye-opener, too. Around 20 years sober, I was beginning to think that I really had it, you know. I've been sober 20 years. I know a lot. I actually know just about everything. And the egocentricity and the narcissistic behaviors, bam, they were back again. I thought, I can't even remember. I guess by that time I moved from Michigan. I know why. When I was in Michigan, I got my MSW. I had a different degree that I could do the work I could in St. Louis. But when I got the MSW, it made me more marketable. So I thought, well, I'll just move. I'll go to Maine. Why did I want to go to Maine? 144 inches of snow every year. Below zero was very common. But you know what? That was great. That was a great experience. I met so many people in my AA meetings up there. The very first, I was up in the tip, up on right across from New Brunswick and Quebec. And the very first meeting I went to, they spoke French. I didn't understand. I'd never been around French before. I knew a little Spanish, but not French. But I knew everything they were talking about. I knew the 12 steps. I knew what they said when they introduced themselves. And I really kind of understood the speaker just by the body language and the facial expressions. It was a great experience, and my favorite meeting up there was in New Brunswick. One of my AA friends up there was about my age or a little older, and we decided, this is not very nice, we decided that we could run drugs across the border because we were such sweet-looking old ladies. We didn't do it, guys. We didn't even take them. We didn't know where to buy them. I know. We had a good time talking about it. There were all kinds of good AA meetings there while I was there. But my daughters, who are a little more sophisticated, I guess, refused to fly on prop planes. They had to fly into Boston, then fly on a prop plane to the airport close by, and then we had to drive almost 2 hours to go where I lived. So they were having no part of that. I decided, if fine, I'll get a job where there's an airport. So I moved to Minnesota. I'm the only person that ever moved south to Minnesota. And, you know, they didn't do AA right either. But I started going to a club there that had a slogan, "There are no strangers, there are only friends we haven't met yet." And I felt right at home when I walked through that door, and I loved that meeting. And I loved all the meetings I went to there. I had a little attack of narcissism when I thought I could do a better job than my boss. And he said, "No, no, no. I like my job. I don't like you." But I decided to retire because I could retire. I had a private practice on the side, and I did that. Then my granddaughter was born down here. Well, they adopted her. She was born in Colorado, but they brought her back down here. And I thought, what kind of grandma am I going to be if I only visit by plane? So I came down here. I really hated you guys. Really hated you guys because nobody knew who I was. Nobody knew how long I'd been sober, and they couldn't give a shit less anyway. So I've had to earn my way. I've had to earn everybody's respect here, and I don't know if I have it after this. But, anyway, if I do, good. So moving is very hard. All my moves were very difficult because I didn't have my friends. I didn't have my peeps. And yet you are my peeps. I see you at all the meetings I go to. I usually go to the 1 o'clock brown baggers, and I'm glad to say there's only one member here, and that's Vita. But it's a great meeting for any of you who might want to come. And I've met some great people in Sunday's 9 a.m. meeting, which I hate missing now because I'm working at Sam's as the taste and tips lady who normally does not smell like fish but does tonight. This has been a fabulous journey, guys. For any of you who are new or nearly new, I do hope you can keep coming back. I do hope you won't be as hard-headed as I was, because it was so unnecessary, and it caused me tremendous amounts of grief. This is just a great way of living. That's what one of my old-timers in my home group, I'm now old-timed him out, but anyway, he used to say this is a great way of living, and it really is. So I hope you keep coming back, and thank you very much. Thank you.